changing myself. My decisions are changing the world. I make a decision to do something, I'm changing being. I'm making reality as I do that. Now, obviously, most of the time, the changes in the world are made not just by individuals, but by groups. But still, those groups make their changes in the world by having common experiences, common meanings, common judgments, and common decisions. So the process is the same, whether it be that of an individual or a group, the same intrinsic intelligibility to the process is there. And if a group wants to change the world for the better, what does it do? It works from common experiences. It seeks to understand those experiences in a common fashion. It makes common judgments, and it makes a common decision as to what its action is going to be. So the process is not just a private one. It's also gone through by groups. The whole, those of you in religious life, I'm sure, have been introduced to the whole notion of communal discernment. Well, what is communal discernment? It's a matter of taking the common experiences of the community and seeking a common understanding and common judgment with regard to what those experiences are and mean, and making a common decision on the basis of that common judgment and common understanding. It's a communal process of going through the same creative movement. And then as you make your common decision, well, you're changing the community. And you're changing, if the decision is an apostolic decision, your change of the community is also a change of the world beyond the community. That's why it's called creative. It's through this process that we create ourselves and create the world in an integral fashion. That's why the vector is called creative. All right. So our first indication of what makes human beings well would be the following. The smooth, uninterrupted functioning of the creative vector of consciousness. Uninterrupted functioning of this creative vector of consciousness. Moving always towards ever new experiences, meanings, judgments, decisions. All of them self-transcendent. Devotedly pursuing, if you want, the objectives of these levels of consciousness. In other words, as I said before, the process is not arbitrary. In Lonergan's terminology, there is an imperative connected with each of these levels of consciousness, determining whether we're authentic or not. Connected with the empirical level, be attentive. Accumulate the data, the sources. You can't understand anything if you don't have any data. Be attentive. Be intelligent doesn't mean have an IQ of 200. It means ask questions about your experience. Don't just drift with it. Ask questions about it. Be reasonable. That is to say, don't pass judgment if you haven't got sufficient evidence. But if you've got the sufficient evidence, for God's sake, make a judgment. Don't hold back in fear of making a judgment if the evidence is in. That's what it is to be reasonable. Withhold judgment until you've got the evidence, but once the evidence is there, judge. Yes, this is true. Be responsible. In other words, self-transcendent in your decisions. Don't just make your decisions egoistic, seeking for satisfaction, real value. And be in love. Be in love with God, with others, yourself, with humanity, with the world. Live in love. Now that's our first approximation to what makes human being well. To the extent that I can, in a smooth and uninterrupted, spontaneous fashion, live out those imperatives. My own personality is a flourishing personality in the continual process of smooth, integrated development. All right, 2A2, complexes and affective self-concepts. Is there anything that needs repeating, or this is what I said before?
Okay, so we'll move to number two.
Accompanying the whole range of these operations, raising and answering questions, are feelings. Feelings are distinct from the operations, but not separate from them. They permeate the operations. The affective states of the human psyche I distinguish psyche from spirit. I don't separate psyche from spirit, but I'm using the term psyche to refer to primarily those affective states that permeate our raising and answering of the questions of the spirit. We have feelings about what we're doing as we seek meaning and truth and decisions. The clearest example of that is having to make a decision. Feelings are highly operative when you have to make a difficult decision. What makes it difficult is precisely the conflict of your feelings. What makes it difficult? To make a hard decision. What makes it hard? Because you got feelings that go in both ways. So we've got feelings that permeate all of those operations. All right. What is the psyche then? The psyche is a matter of, this is my own position, I think Jung would agree with this, conscious, he would also add unconscious, but he uses the word differently from the way I do, I'll get into that later. Conscious energy. By energy I mean what Einstein meant when he said energy is mass times the square of the speed of light. That becomes conscious animals and human beings. That unfolding energy of the universe. I believe energy, those of you with a background in metaphysics, is what Aristotle meant by prime matter, prime potency. If you don't have a background in metaphysics, don't worry about that. But energy is the prime potency of the cosmos, and it takes on ever new forms in the course of evolution, or what Lonergan calls emergent probability. And when it reaches animal and human form, it becomes conscious. And that conscious energy is what we mean when we say psychic energy. Okay, it's a quantum. It's a measurable thing. Okay. That's my position on it. I think, as I say, Jung will substantiate that. But psyche is energy become conscious. Human psyche. Okay. Now, the psyche is distributed. That energy, that energy is distributed into different units. It becomes distributed into different units as we develop. Units or compositions, if you want, compositions of energy, blocks of energy. Units is probably the best, the clearest term for it. And Jung called those units of energy complexes. Complexes of the psyche are units of psychic energy. And those complexes come into consciousness in our feelings and images. For instance, dreams. Particularly if a dream has a purely personal meaning, everything in the dream is a representative image for a complex. Everything, including yourself. When you appear in your own dreams, what's appearing there is the ego complex. How you understand and feel about yourself in the various circumstances that are unraveled in the dream. We'll get into that more when we get into dreams in more detail. But those complexes come into consciousness in our feelings and in our images. And as I said, those feelings permeate the whole order of the human spirit, the creative vector. To help you understand a little bit more what I'm talking about by complexes, Jung arrived at the notion of complexes very early in his psychiatric career. He was trying to arrive at a better understanding of mental disturbance than he found operative among his professional colleagues when he began his career at the mental hospital in Zurich. And so he developed a word association test. To try to get at the underlying roots of psychic disturbance. In our terms, to try to get at what was blocking people from being attentive, intelligent, reasonable, responsible people. That's really what he was doing. He didn't have that vocabulary. That's really what he was doing. What's blocking them? What's keeping them? What's holding them back? Fears, desires, associations, so on. Keeping people back from that smooth, uninterrupted unfolding of the creative vector of their consciousness. What's stopping them? And his first way into this, before he had done much work with dreams, was through the word association test, in which he would read a word to the subject, and the subject was expected to respond as quickly as he or she possibly could, and the responses, the time, and everything else was measured. And Jung would find that under certain circumstances, there were certain words that led to very strange responses. And these are simple words. They lead to very strange responses. For instance, the person repeats the word 10 times before giving a response and begins to blush before he or she gives the response. In other words, they've passed through several other possibilities and they don't want to reveal something, you see. And then Jung would take that and say, now, why did you do that, you see? And then he'd start going into the exploration of what was blocking the spontaneous associations and so on. He's got a whole, it's a very elaborate sort of thing. Okay. This was his first way of getting at complexes. And he found then that there were certain disturbances psyche that prevented the person from performing in a smooth, uninterrupted fashion as an attentive, intelligent, reasonable, responsible being. Certain blocks by way of fear, desire, associations that gave rise to desire and fear, and so on and so forth. And those blocks he called complexes. Certain things that just, if you say a certain word, I'm lost for a day. If I see a certain face or think of a certain person, I'm gone. I can no longer perform my tasks as an attentive, intelligent, reasonable, responsible being. Something is holding me back. And I'm caught by an emotional complex that's in the way of the smooth performance of those operations. You wake up in the morning, or anything has ever happened, it's an image that comes into your head and you're angry for the first 4 hours. And that anger is in the way of the smooth unfolding of your operations as a human person. Okay? That anger is connected with something. Some images, some ideas. And it has some roots. And Jung's original practice, his earliest practice as a psychiatrist, was to get at the roots of those disturbing conflicts. Get at the roots, find out what they are, see what we can do to heal them.
Disturbing,
that's precisely the next point that I was going to get to. His original notion of complex was as a disturbing emotional factor. He developed his notion of complex later so that everything in the psychic is organized into complexes. All the energy. Not just complexes are not just disturbing, there are also positive complexes that help the smooth performance of the person. There are positive units of energy. And if those can be tapped, and what, to the extent that those are tapped, the person's performance as a human subject unfolds in relatively smooth and uninterrupted fashion. So, as he developed his thought, you're precisely right on this corner, that as he developed his thought, complexes came to cover everything. All of the psychic energy, all of our psychic energy, is distributed into complexes. Okay? And those complexes can be either helpful or subversive. Vis-a-vis the smooth performance of our responsibilities as a human subject. Now, I'm putting that in terminology that Jung would not have used, but it's getting basically the same insight. And if it isn't, well, it's getting at an insight that's better than his. No. I am using my own language to express this. Our psychic energy is distributed into blocks that are complexes. And those complexes, remember, now by complexes, in terms of consciousness, I'm talking about feelings here. Those feelings are either helpful or in the way of our performance of the operations of intelligence, rationality, and moral responsibility. They're either helpful or they interfere with it and subvert it along the way. They can help, for instance. The complexes can help us by providing images just when we need them for fresh insight. What am I going to do in this situation? And all of a sudden, I imagine a possibility that hits things off right away. My psyche is cooperating with my questioning process. I'm looking for something, and all of a sudden the image is there. Coughs it up. The psyche is cooperating with the questions of the person. Gives you exactly what you need. What in the world are we going to do under these circumstances? All of a sudden it's there and it makes sense. But there are other times where that's not happening. The psyche, the sensitive stream of consciousness, is somehow blocked. And it's not coughing up the images that I need for insight. Or it is not giving me memories, giving me the memories that I need in order to do something in the present situation that might, where, you know, I really could draw on my past experience, but somehow it's not available to me, readily available. It's all blocked. Okay, so the complexes can be either helpful or subversive. None of us is without both of these experiences. I think we've had moments in our lives where, the psyche is just cooperating and everything's really going along fine, and creative process of self-development and development of the world and so on. But we've also had experiences, I'm sure, where the feelings are in the way. And where the development that we really want is blocked and we cannot get beyond it. Nothing that we do, it seems to get beyond those blockages. Affective energy. Somehow they're just stuck, fixed, we're in a rut, a cul-de-sac, a blind alley, we can't get out of it. We come to a dead end every time, and it's the same damn dead end every time. But somehow we can't get around it or past it. That's in terminology that I'm using, a certain complex of energy that is blocking the unfolding of our own being and the development that we would like to be able to contribute to the rest of the world. In prayer, for instance, another example. In prayer, you know, you can be going along and in contact with the Lord. All of a sudden you become aware that there's some kind of truth that is trying to make its way through, and you begin to feel resistance. Now, a good spiritual director, I think, knows that whenever that happens, you're probably onto something quite important. Where the prayer's been going well, and all of a sudden there's some kind of thing that gently is trying to make its way through, and the person doesn't want to go with it. There's some kind of block, complex, psychic energy that's resisting. You're not responsible for that. Psyche is spontaneous. It's a spontaneous resistance. You're responsible for what you do with it. But the feeling of the resistance is not morally culpable. What you do with the resistance, that's where moral responsibility comes in. But that's just another example of how a complex can perhaps subvert or interfere with our unfolding, unfolding of ourselves. Okay, it's 12 o'clock, let's break. I'm back.